Falcons fans, we are a week away from the NFL draft, and we are back once again for the FalconCast podcast as we take a look ahead to what could, or should in some cases, who knows, happen next week when the Falcons go on the clock for the first of 3 days of the NFL draft, one of my favorite...
4 days.
4 days. Three days.
Sunday?
No, nothing Sunday.
I don't even keep track. I'm sorry.
Keep your Sunday open.
Sunday? Really? Yeah. Was it like that last year? Mm-hmm. When we introduced the Thursday night?
Yeah, first night is first round. Second night is second and third. And then Saturday starting at noon.
Yeah, 4 through 7.
4 through
okay.
7.
Okay.
So, yeah. Anyways, Jay Adams here with Daniel Cox. Once again, as we delve deep into the college world of prospects, and we're going to talk about a couple of things today. We're going to have a little debate.
Yeah.
We'll start out with a little debate on the tight end position. We're going to get into maybe some college conferences that have proven to be pretty popular in Falcons lore. We'll talk a little bit about the schedule. The schedule set to the 2013 NFL schedule set to be released Thursday night, 8 p.m. And we'll talk a little bit about that. Of course, we'll have our Falcons Flash, our most interesting thing we found on the internet. And then we'll have some parting thoughts that, may or may not include Beavers. Who knows? So let's kick this off with the debate. We're going to argue a little bit, which, we'll probably end up just agreeing because that's what we always
behind closed doors.
Yeah. But we're going to talk about this tight end topic because it's certainly – one that keeps hanging in there. And despite, the Falcons arguably having greater needs at the cornerback position or defensive end, mock drafts still, and some very reputable mock
drafts.
Gil Brandt, a couple other NFL.com. Yeah.
Charles Davis.
Mm-hmm. A couple of really smart NFL analysts are
Don
still.
Don Banks, SI.
Yeah, and that one was updated last week.
Yeah.
He switched from Desmond Trufant, the cornerback out of Washington. So this still exists as a topic of conversation. And, of course, the Falcons, I think for the past 3 years, have been projected to identify Tony Gonzalez's heir apparent. In the draft, they have yet to do that. A lot of people still think it's this year, and a lot of people still think it's going to be that number 30 pick, which is interesting considering the pool of talent that could be there. And I guess just the overall need. I mean, you're not talking about a guy who you expect to come in and – I mean, look, if you get either one of the top two tight ends, they're going to be able to contribute from day one.
Right.
But – it's not the need. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk a little bit about this because I think you've got an interesting scenario, and I'll let you go ahead and explain that and introduce kind of where we're thinking here.
Yeah, I think it's truly based on what happens in the draft. And, we all know the draft can do so many different things, and it's once it starts, you realize that it's nothing like what you anticipated it to be. None of the picks go in order that you expected. But there are scenarios out there, and we wrote about this as we spotlighted on AtlantaFalcons.com this morning with Tyler Eifert. A run on offensive tackles. We've discussed this quarterback thing, and other teams early in the second round wanting to get back into the first round to maybe grab a guy they like that's sliding because the cornerback class is kind of is not as so definite as it has been in past years. Last year, we everyone knew Andrew Luck and RG3 were going to be the top guys. There was no question about that. This year is not really that case. So there's positions like that are have the potential to slide and or make create a run. And we've seen that before as well. Back in 2008, in relation to the Falcons, offensive tackles started coming off the board and. Thomas Dimitroff made a trade to move back into the end of the first round to get Sam Baker. So we see things like this happen all the time. Will there be a run on cornerbacks? The cornerback depth this year is maybe not as strong from what I've read as tight end depth. You know, we all know Zach Ertz and Tyler Eifert are the top two tight ends in the draft, but then you've got some other guys after that. The guy his name escapes me, but from Florida is another top guy.
Tight end?
Yes.
Jordan Reed.
That's him.
Yep.
That's him. Gavin Escobar is another another name that we hear a lot about.
Travis Kelce is a name I'm hearing a lot,
from
too, from our fan base, too.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of guys out there.
There is. You're right. And so that depth is maybe a little better than at cornerback. So I guess ultimately it's the debate comes down to if the Falcons are sitting at number 30 and say – if you assume Desmond Trufant is one of the Falcons' top cornerback targets, and maybe Cornelius Carradine or some of those defensive ends that aren't, you know, the top 10 picks because they're not going to be there, but those guys are gone as well, and maybe now you're looking at a cornerback with a second round grade or a defensive end with a second round grade. Do you? It's essentially the best player available scenario, but do you take the tight end? Who's there? Who is the best player at his position in the draft? And it's almost similar, and we'll never know it because Thomas is not going to be so open about that. But is that what they did last year in the draft with Peter Kahns? The top rated center is sitting there, and it didn't look like a need right away, but it turns out it's a good pick. And you know, tight end is not necessarily a need this year, but moving down the line, it could be. And does that pick kind of keep your offense, as explosive as it already is, does it keep them on pace? Because a guy like Zach Ertz or Eifert can come in and maybe do some of the same things that Gonzalez does.
Here's my thing on the tight end position right now, as things stand. When you're talking about this position at the draft, okay, you've got two guys right now, Eifert and Ertz. Mm-hmm. You know what you're getting with them.
Yeah.
Okay. Ertz has been compared to Jason Witten. Mm-hmm. I've heard a bunch of different comparisons, even to Tony.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Graham as well. Mm-hmm. For Eifert. Okay. These are two players. Okay. When you get to number 30.
Yeah.
All right. You're talking about 30 players in. You get to that point. Or excuse me, 29 players in. You get to that point. You kind of start to lose some of that surefire, guaranteed star quality kind of player who's going to be able to come in and make an impact. Mm-hmm. Okay. The more picks go by, you start to lose some of that. Okay.
Right.
And when you get down to 30, and you're talking about first round value, okay, mm-hmm. I think you need to think about value. You need to think about what is going to get you the most bang for your buck. And if your top cornerbacks are off the board, mm-hmm. which they probably will be.
Yeah.
Your top three, Dee Milliner, Xavier Rhodes, and Desmond Trufant. Those three guys projected to be long gone before the Falcons even go on the clock. Mm-hmm. Then you're getting into kind of that second tier with Jonathan Banks, Darius Slay, DJ Hayden, mm-hmm. Amerson.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these guys who you know are probably going to be there in the second round. Okay? So the question is, just because cornerback is more of a need, do you take a cornerback who has that second round grade, like you said,
mm-hmm.
or defensive end, or whatever the situation is?
Yeah.
Or do you go with your best value at number 30? And I think you talk to any GM that drafts that late, and I think once you get to about 20, 21, 22 in the draft,
mm-hmm.
you start to get into a situation where you've really got to think about what your value is. What are you getting out of this pick?
Yeah.
Not so much are you fulfilling a need. Because, look, you've got, if you're the Falcons, you've got 11 picks to fill your needs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But only one pick, really, where you can truly fulfill the value of picking at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I think it's it's you go with the best player available. Whether it's an immediate need, which tight end isn't right now, mm-hmm. or a secondary need, so to speak, where you don't need the guy now, you know you need him at some point. You know, and we, like you said, we saw that with Cons in the second round last year. You didn't. Nobody thought that he would fall to that point.
Yeah.
Some things happened. And I think we've said it before on this podcast is that there are so many, this draft in particular, there are so many different things that could happen in the top 10,
yeah.
let alone the rest of the first round, that are really going to dictate what these first three rounds look like. Mm-hmm. And there are going to be some really good players who fall.
Absolutely.
I still believe that there are going to be some really good players that fall because teams are going to value certain players a little more than others that we all value. You know, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? It just
yeah.
everybody who kind of analyzes the draft and looks at all these different players, teams most certainly are going to have their eye on players that we're going to be like, huh? Wait a
yeah.
minute. He was supposed to go this. You know, that's going to happen a
oh,
lot
absolutely.
This year.
You see that with quarterbacks, but I think this year you'll see it with a lot of players.
Yes.
You know, I don't think many people thought that Christian Ponder would be drafted where he was drafted by Minnesota. I think it was like a top 10 pick, right?
Yeah.
Top 12, something like that, 2 years ago, the year he came out.
Yeah.
And you talk about best player available, and I think that's like the part, you know, the 1A part of this conversation, because you're right, it's almost subjective this year. It's really, you know, how do you feel about this guy? How do you feel about that guy? I mean, and we talked about it last week, citing Gil Brandt from Peter King's article, where he said he felt like from players 15 through 45, they're almost the same in possibilities of how they can contribute immediately.
Right, and here's a good example. The good example of this is the defensive end position,
mm-hmm.
because there are so many defensive ends in this draft who are kind of slated to be first-round, top second-round guys. Mm-hmm. Okay, so really tell me what's the difference between a Margus Hunt, between a Tank Carradine, mm-hmm. between... help me out here.
Yeah.
Of course, there's so many that I can't even
it's
remember.
Funny when you need stuff.
Alex Okafor, Bjorn
yeah.
Werner.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, these guys, like, what is the difference? How do you separate all these guys out? And I think that's going to be the thing where that's going to hold up a lot of teams because they're all kind of similar value
yeah.
guys. And it's like, which one do you take? Which one do you think has the most upside? And I could see there being like some good arguments in the draft war rooms of some of these teams that are looking to draft a defensive end between which one do you go with?
Yeah.
Because even the guys at the top, your mm-hmm. Deion Jordan, your
Ansah,
mm-hmm. These are guys who like, you don't really truly know what you're going to get. I think Jordan, depending on where you play him.
Yeah.
Could be the most ready, but
and even he's raw, you know.
Exactly. This is the thing with that particular position. So when you get to the point where you're like, okay, I don't really know what I'm getting. And look, you could have like four really good defensive ends mm-hmm. sitting there at number 30 just waiting for you. But maybe the debate is, okay, these four defensive ends look like they're probably going to be pretty good. If we make the right pick, mm-hmm. hopefully it works out. We're able to develop somebody and bring them along. But let's say Eifert and Ertz are still there, or one of the two is still there. And you know, I mean, you can pretty much tell these two guys are going to be superstars one day.
Yeah.
It's a tough decision. And one I'm glad that I don't get paid to make.
Yeah.
But it's interesting when you think about it, and I'm glad you brought this topic up because it's – one that we, you know, like I said, we keep seeing it. This tight end possibility prevails. Even after everything that's happened in free agency and kind of everything that's going on, it's still there. As mm-hmm. like at number 30, it's still a possibility in a lot of people's minds that this is the direction the Falcons go.
And you have to acknowledge that to some degree. You and I were talking earlier about off the podcast, we were discussing certain players rising and falling, and this idea of rising in the draft, it's media driven, but you have to credit some of the guys that are driving that that rising and falling, because they're not all just making information up or just speculating. They do talk to people. They do talk to GMs. They talk to scouts. They're getting information. But, you know, I expected when Gonzalez announced his return that we would just stop seeing tight ends altogether in the mocks, and it's still there. And so you kind of got to credit someone like a guy like Dom Banks if he's sticking with that pick. You start to wonder why, you know, what's there? Not necessarily what does he know, but what is it about that pick that he's stuck with it?
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, for me that keeps coming up is that, okay, it's Tony announced his return, mm-hmm. and suddenly the mentality is that we no longer need a tight end. Well, that's not true.
Yeah.
Okay, because I've heard in some cases that he said 100% he's not going to play beyond this year. I cannot imagine a scenario where he plays beyond this year. I can't. Mm-hmm. Who knows what's going to happen, because he certainly flirted with this a million times.
Yes.
But, and I guess, you never say never. But, look, this is going to be a need. And when you talk about Matt Ryan and his development, his continued progression as a pro quarterback, when you take away a Tony Gonzalez, you need to have somebody in there who is going to be a reliable option for him, because he has gotten to the point in his career where the tight end is a great outlet pass for him.
Absolutely.
You need to have that built in. So, you know, you look at a guy, okay, so a guy who's already on the roster, you look at Chase Kaufman. Mm-hmm. Okay, he's a guy you're hoping to develop. Who knows what's going to happen? He made a fantastic catch in the playoffs against Seattle.
And he was highly touted coming
highly
in.
Touted. He's just kind of had a rough go with things. Maybe he's comfortable now. Maybe he's a guy who makes that progression and ends up, you know, asserting more of himself as a reliable tight end option. You still need another guy who's going to be, because you've got Gallarda and you've got Michael Palmer, who's a restricted free agent at this point. I don't know what's going to happen there. But, okay, Gallarda was the best blocking tight end that we had on the roster. Doesn't mean he's going to be going out catching a whole lot of passes.
Right.
So we're talking about different types of tight ends that you need here. And so when you're talking about the type of tight end you need, okay, Eifert and Ertz fill that for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this year, while it's not an immediate need, what are you going to do next year?
Yeah, and that's the question. That's the 1B of this conversation is, what does the offense look like without a tight end that makes plays like Tony Gonzalez? You know, I wrote in the Tyler Eifert spotlight this morning, it seems a little bit like overkill when you've got a Pro Bowl quarterback who can spread the ball around. You've got a guy that has potential in Harry Douglas who doesn't even get the ball that much, you know, for various reasons. And you have
Julio and Radio
on the outside. You know, what does taking away the tight end do to all of that?
It's you'd a like domino to believe, effect.
Well, maybe they can continue to go, but this blew me away when I got this answer from Matt Miller, who helps us out from Bleacher Report, doing our scouting as we profile some players. He said, Eifert can do all the things Tony Gonzalez does. That doesn't mean he's a Hall of Fame tight end, but he's a natural fit in the Atlanta offense and will be able to step in and play a similar role. He has the size to be a threat in the red zone and the agility to move around pre-snap. The coaching staff wouldn't have to adjust the offense for Eifert. And you, as I look through the, you definitely, if you're listening and you hear me talking about this, you should check out the photo gallery, because you start to see like these catches, and all his catches are away from his body. Mm-hmm. They're securing the ball, and everyone talks about his hands and how strong they are. So,
Now look, I know there's probably a lot of people listening right now who are like, you guys are nuts. There's no way we should draft a tight end in the first round. This is something we could fulfill. I understand.
I heard it from on Twitter this morning.
I know. I understand that argument. I don't know where I'm at on this. Like, like I said, thank goodness it's not up to me to decide, because I don't know. There's so many different scenarios that who knows what could happen. Mm-hmm. But just plain devil's advocate, I can sit here and see, okay, like I said, you're looking at other positions. So you're looking at potentially linebacker. You're looking at defensive end. You're looking at cornerback. Okay. If you don't have a slam dunk guy in that group that you feel really good about, and you know that those two tight ends are going to provide a great future for your offense.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to sit here and say, okay, you know, draft the go and reach on the cornerback, go and reach on the defensive end, just because you need to fulfill that need. And this is what is going to scare me if this does happen. If the Falcons do end up going tight end, is that you're going to have people who toe the ledge and think the sky is falling. And I warn you, do not do that.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing, and this is the weird thing about, you know, the first round being one night and not having the second round immediately following that, is that you've got about 24 hours to stew on what the pick was. And this is what worries me about that 24 hours if a tight end is taken, is that a lot of people are going to react like the sky is falling, and it's not, because like we've said, if you're in a situation where you've got a second round grade on every other position of need that you have, that means you're going to address that need in the second round, which is a great place to get some good picks.
Yeah.
And who says you don't trade up in the second round? The Falcons have, at that point, will have 10 picks to play around with that they'll be able to, you know, of course you can't trade the compensatory picks, but you can move up in the second if you want to. If there's a guy who you've got a high second round grade on and you really want him, who's to say you don't trade up and you get Jonathan Banks or you get DJ Hayden? And if you end up with Tyler Eifert and you know, Jonathan Banks or DJ Hayden in your first two rounds, that's a success to me.
Yeah.
So far, I mean, you're having a heck of a start. Call.
Three. It's funny as you talk, I was like, okay, I got one thing I want to add. Then there's two things. Three.
Add them all.
Super quick things, and then we'll move on to the next topic. First thing, which was the third thing I thought of in my head. You mentioned towing the ledge and that 24-hour period after you take that first pick before the next round of the draft. Before we start jumping off buildings and being worried about, you know, drafting the top tight end, though we don't need him, let's just kind of wait and see, because that scenario you mentioned could certainly happen, and it's that which almost change your opinion. If you can get Jonathan Banks or a guy like that, Darius Slay, any of those second tier fringe guys, you start to feel a little better about your cornerback position all of a sudden, which is where you thought you were gonna go in your first round, and that Zach Ertz or Tyler Eifert pick starts to grow on you a little bit. So you know, kind of get three rounds in and digest it before you start freaking out.
I think initial reaction though is going to be freak out. Nah, you know, I understand it. We're trying to warn you all.
Absolutely,
just don't do it.
And don't read between any lines here. We're not trying to set, you know, butter.
This is just us turning on a recorder and talking.
But here's the interesting thing about this conversation. We've talked about it for now like 20 minutes. Thomas and his staff have considered this scenario and dozens of scenarios we haven't discussed or even imagined, and they've spent hours discussing them and how they would handle them. And that's pretty interesting. It's like that preparation, and because you know this conversation has occurred.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of interesting when you think about preparation for the draft, not just scouting guys, but planning, you know, how you're going to go about it.
Here's the thing is that not only are you – thinking about that situation, but you're totally preparing for it if you're on the other side of the building, because you're going through your practice drafts and the scouting staff, everybody will get in the war room and they'll go through and they'll do a mock draft just like we see on the internet.
Yeah,
you see these guys, you know, doing mock drafts. They're going to go in there and they're going to do a mock draft. They're going to do several mock drafts with many different scenarios. And they're going to look at it and say, okay, when we're at 30 and so-and-so's off the board, we targeted him, he's gone. So-and-so is still there, but we feel like we can get him in the second round. They're going to go through all these scenarios. And they're going to be like, all right, well, in this scenario, we know we're taking so-and-so.
Yeah.
So the wheels are turning on this already.
Absolutely.
So.
I forgot what the other
That's probably best.
Yeah, it's Yeah. If it did, oh, no.
Oh, okay.
Here it reminds me of a saying from my dad, talking about getting your best player available, so to speak, or grabbing a tight end that you think is going to develop into a Pro Bowl potential guy. Versus, you know, some guys, maybe a reach, as some people call it, you know, a guy you're not real sure about. Maybe a guy with injury concerns or injury history, those sorts of things. What is it? A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush?
Yeah.
Right? Something like that, basically.
And you're our resident old adage expert. So
yes. Oh,
I'm going to defer to you on this one, but yeah, I think that it sounds right.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, having a bird that you physically
have. Oh, don't try to explain it.
Versus trying to hunt two in a bush because there's more of them, you know?
All right, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. I thought you would take us on some strange trip there, but I agree.
Yeah. So
the debate rages on, and I'm sure, you know, tweet us your thoughts, because I would love to hear
totally,
them. Totally,
because I've got so many things I need to respond to this morning.
It's an interesting, but I think it's a valid,
absolutely.
When you look at it from a football perspective, and you clear out the idea that, okay, you've got these needs that you have to address, it's not, you've got the whole draft, it's not just the first round, and so, like I said, value comes into it at number 30. If you're picking at 5, totally different story.
Yeah.
Totally different story. Because chances are the top player at every position is going to be there.
And as great as that position, that scenario is, you don't want to pick at number 5.
Exactly.
Unless you got that pick from some other means.
Right.
Than losing. So,
right. You know. Well, that debate rages on. I don't think that we've solved anything, but we've at least talked it through. So, move on to some football conferences and talk about why the SEC produces so many draft prospects. The Falcons have selected 11 players from the SEC under Thomas Dimitroff since 2008. Top 10 in the draft is typically full of SEC players.
Yeah,
and
first round in general.
The SEC is the conference that TD most draws from in his drafts here in Atlanta. So what is it about the SEC? I'll just go ahead and say it. It's the best football conference in the country, and that's why.
Absolutely. But why is it the best football conference?
Oh, here we go. This is, you know, the chicken or egg that you could sit here and talk.
Is it the coaching or the players?
Is it the coaching? Is it the players? Is it something in the water? Is it the environment? Is it – who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows what it is? I do wonder, though. And because I've had this conversation before, is you look at certain programs within the SEC, I don't think it's the SEC as a whole that makes – it's certainly that the most talented players typically end up in the SEC, and certainly that's not a hard and fast rule. There are a lot of talented players all over the place. But you see the SEC, it's a conference that – I think high school players strive to play in. And then these, you know, you go to an SEC school and you beat the heck out of each other for 4 years, and then you go on to the league, or maybe three. What I wonder is, does the SEC make the most pro-ready player?
There you go.
And I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. I'm going to go with the Pac-12.
Really?
Yeah.
Because of the passing and the offense?
Yes. I think it's the styles. But I think you could make the argument where maybe the Pac-12 makes the best offensive pro-ready player. Maybe the SEC makes the most defensive pro-ready player. I don't know. It's an interesting – and this is me just talking out loud.
No, but
I've had this conversation before, and I think it's interesting – when you look at some of these guys who end up having really big careers in the SEC, and then maybe they don't really do a whole lot in the pros.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not going to name names. I don't want to get into that, but I just think it's interesting. But then you've got a guy like Julio Jones, who is going to be, geez, who knows what he's going to be, because the sky's the limit for him. But I don't know. I just look at offensively. I think there are more pro ready players coming out of the Pac-12. And I don't feel free to argue with me.
No, I'm just thinking through all your, what you're saying.
That's good because I didn't think through what I was saying.
I think football. I think it starts with just the South, the Southern region of the United States, and in the Southern region that goes from, you know, Texas. In my mind, Texas like the bottom half of the country, almost Texas to the east. Football is a means a little bit more, I think, in this part of the country. It just does. And most of the obviously the SEC is located in the South. A lot of players come into the SEC from that region already. They grew up watching those schools. So I think there's that, and then there's the heritage of the SEC. These guys are used to playing in packed out, huge, enormous stadiums where the expectation every Saturday is to win, and it's important, and you play hard and you play tough. And that's not to say it doesn't happen like that all across the country. Hey, I know in Michigan, the Big House, they pack that place and they make it an atmosphere as well. But SEC, it just has a feel of every Saturday you have to win. Because if you can run through the SEC and go undefeated, you're going to be a national champion, or at least you're going to be in that game.
Yeah,
and I think that's shown. So the competitiveness of that conference is so high and so consistent. I think that if nothing else, mentally, guys come in and they're used to that spotlight. They're used to playing in big games. They're used to having coaches expect a high level of performance from them.
Yeah.
So that's something I think about when I think of the SEC and the guys that come out. You know, physically, like you look at a guy like Julio, for example. Athletic talents and everything were there, but you see him come in. He takes coaching. He's a good guy, polite. He says yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. But he knows how to play. He understands preparation. And all his conversations with the media with his rookie year was all about learning and I'm just trying to prepare and, you know, do my best. And I got to learn to play the playbook better and all this stuff. And that's straight out of Alabama's MO. That's how they run that program. And it's the same at Georgia. So I think guys are mentally ready to come into the NFL and play because of those expectations and that competition level, and the talent is all around you in the SEC, so you can't take a play off, so to speak, or a week off, so to speak, and get away with it maybe like you can in some other conferences around the country.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I think there's really no – you look at some of the guys who are successful in the league, and there's really no – rhyme or reason. You could have a guy who played D2 or heck, even D3 or played at like a mid-major and they come into the league and they just ball out.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think I think the character is a big part of it, because I think if you're a guy who comes in from a small college, you've got a little bit of a chip on your shoulder, you've got a lot to prove. Okay. So you come in and, you know, you know that you've got to make the most of every snap, every play. So I think you can learn that at other conferences. But I think you're right. You come from the SEC. I mean, it's the atmosphere, you know, I haven't seen anything like it.
Yeah.
I've been around the college scene, and it's amazing. Some of the places you go, Georgia, LSU, Auburn, Alabama. I mean, these are amazing atmospheres to play in. And but, you know, there's a lot to be said about your Michigans or your Ohio States. Yeah. So
absolutely.
I don't know if it's
– but national championships, especially lately, come out of the SEC.
You're right. You're right. So you've got champions.
And half the league and half that conference, I think – has an expectation when they begin the season, we're going to win a national championship.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. I hear it from Coach Frick at Georgia a lot. We want to win the SEC East, and it's like if we win that, we feel like we're going to be in the mix at the end.
And you should, because it's an amazing conference, and if you can win either of the divisions in that conference, I mean, you're good football. You're a darn good football team.
Yeah. You're going to be in the SEC championship game if you win that.
Yeah.
History says you're going to be in the national championship.
Right. But it's interesting as far as, you know, making players pro-ready, which I think might be a different conversation away from just
I think it is.
Conferences. Yeah. I think that comes down to more programs, schemes, universities to some extent, you know. But it's interesting. It's an interesting point. But, I mean, obviously there's something in the SEC that Thomas likes because he's taken 11 guys from it.
Yeah. The weather's nice, too.
The weather's nice. Yeah.
Nice campuses.
Close to home.
Lots of good scenery. So,
yep.
You know, it's always a draw as well.
Of course. All right. Well, the schedule is being released tomorrow. We'll go ahead and just knock this out real quick. The schedule being released Thursday night, 8 p.m. That's Eastern Time. Certainly some big games on the docket this year.
Yeah.
Give me your best one. What's the one you're looking forward to the most?
Home or away?
I don't care.
Okay. I mean, I can't. I wish the game was at home, but I can't. And it's already – we're already hearing it. We were watching NFL AM this morning. We're hearing it. San Francisco – Atlanta, rematch NFC Championship game. You know, because as I look through the opponents, a game like New England is intriguing, but it's outside the conference, so it doesn't have quite as much weight. You know, Washington's an intriguing game, but we beat them last year. You know, Seattle as well. San Francisco, Atlanta, I mean.
I think it's the game.
Yeah.
It's the game this year for the Falcons, but I think
it has to be
on a bigger scale.
AFC.
I think it's clearly one of the best game. What's one of the best matchups in the league this year? Mm-hmm. And so, who knows what's going to happen with that game? But I could see that easily being a primetime game.
Yeah,
and I think there are probably about five or six good candidates for primetime games. I think. You know, with success comes a big stage.
I think
you'll see the Falcons on it.
I think you'll see the Saints Falcons again on a primetime level, perhaps. I think that's always going to be a consideration as long as the Falcons are kind of playing where they are, and the Saints seem to always be a story now. So, I think that's something you'll consider.
Agree, and I think Seattle could be a contender for that.
No doubt
for primetime. Green Bay,
I
think
will
definitely be a primetime game.
That's an away game, so.
Mm-hmm. And as far as how they make the schedule, my guess is that if that's going to be a primetime game, there's no way it's going to be in December because they want to see those quarterbacks throw. So I would guess that's going to be an early game of the season.
Good call.
Cause you know, TV audience is going to want to see both those quarterbacks go at it.
You could say the same thing about San Francisco. Where do you think they would put that game?
San Francisco? It could be opening weekend.
Yeah.
It's big enough. It's a huge game.
Yeah.
You know, of course, they gotta figure out.
You think it would be
the East Coast, West Coast thing? And and as far as being like, if it was going to be the doubleheader or whatever. But it's I think it's certainly big enough to sit on that stage, you know?
Yeah, no doubt.
So certainly I think, you know, we've seen in recent years that the Falcons have just gotten – more and more national attention as far as you know, playing in prime time. I think it could be even more, and not more as in volume. I think it'll probably be four, five, maybe six games where you're in prime time.
Yeah.
But I think the level, like maybe getting a seat on opening weekend on the Monday night doubleheader or something like that, or you know, maybe the Sunday night opener.
Yeah.
Who knows? I think. But I think that first game of the season is going to be a big one. It's not going to be. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't see it being like the Falcons and Jets. But who knows? It'd be interesting. Here's the other thing too. You got to think of is, do they take this into account? And we don't know how they make the sausage, because that's
yes.
Making a schedule is probably one of the hardest things that the league does because so, there's so
32
teams, 32 venues.
Yeah.
You got venues that are holding different events.
Conflicting factors,
trying to make it
fair.
Yeah. But here's the thing, you know, the Falcons haven't opened at home since 2009.
Yeah.
So does that because you're talking about the big games, San Francisco, Green Bay, both on the road. Seattle's in the Georgia Dome. So,
yeah.
You know, who knows? Who knows what they're going to end up doing if they take that into consideration. But it'll be fun to see where they
– it will be fun.
I can almost guarantee that it's not going to be the awesome home away.
Yeah.
That we had last year.
That was such a convenient schedule.
Well, it was nice for me because I travel. So it was nice not to go on these 3-week – stints where you're traveling every weekend for 3 weeks, but you know, it was also nice to not be in a situation where you're away from the Georgia Dome for 2 or 3 weeks at a time,
right?
You know, and so being in that environment every other week was nice, but you got into a routine. It was great. I know a lot of people were kind of dubious about that, but I loved it, and I think the players loved it too, because you just kind of knew what was happening every week. So
every other week you can handle,
yeah. But again, schedule released 8 p.m. Thursday. We will have it on AtlantaFalcons.com. Of course, tune into NFL Network for the live show beginning at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time for their schedule release show. All right, let's get on to Falcons Flash here real quick. We'll get on to Falcons Flash in a flash.
In a flash.
And Daniel, you go ahead. This is a great story.
We were talking about players that rise, and it's, you know, this idea of rising is kind of internet driven. It's guys, players you start to hear the name of more often. One of those guys that I've been hearing the name of is DJ Hayden, cornerback out of Houston. 6 weeks ago, it wasn't a name we heard much about, but lately you're starting to hear him more. He's making some visits, and they're public, and a lot of draft Nick guys are starting to talk about him. I came across something on him last night. It wasn't even related to the Falcons necessarily, but his name was picked as in the mock monitor, so Falcons somewhat related. But the story of DJ Hayden is pretty interesting, and I did not know this until last evening. He was involved in an incident or an injury on the practice field at Houston during the 2012 season that almost ended his life on the field. He severed his inferior vena cava during practice last November. Typically, it's an injury that happens in high-speed automobile accidents. And as you pointed out to me this morning, 95% of the time it is fatal.
Yeah.
Wow. Think about that for a minute.
I don't want to.
Yeah. So there's a good quote here, and this is from Pro Football Talk, and they grabbed it from looks like out of maybe, I'm not even sure, the newsherald.com, so I'm not sure where that may be without following the link. But you can find it on Pro Football Talk. He was describing the incident. Obviously, they were doing team versus scout team. The ball was starting his way, and he's a cornerback. It was underthrown. He ran into the safety. The safety's knee hit him in the chest. He fell to the ground. He felt like he had the wind knocked out of him. He was breathing, but he said he wasn't breathing right. The doctor took him inside, asking them these questions, and then all of a sudden, he gets really cold. He said he looked around, and he said, I'm getting sleepy, and then this got to be one of the most terrifying things in the world. His left eye goes pitch black, and he can't see out of it, and then the same thing starts to happen to his right eye, but a little more passively progressing, and, you know, he obviously starts praying and everything. So they rush him to the hospital, the CAT scan. Long story short, they found internal bleeding in this severed inferior vena cava, and they fixed it up. He put some sutures in it, stitched him back together, and closed them up, and here I am today. Makes it sound so simple, but it's such an insane probably 24 hours for that guy. It's a real interesting story. From a perspective of things that don't happen to people very often, and it's certainly not things that people live to tell about. So DJ Hayden's a name on the rise, and he's a guy that, you know, he's probably feeling pretty good about having his name rising. He made it through a pretty scary situation. So good for him. And that caught my eye last night.
Yeah, very, very interesting stuff. Certainly a tough thing to try and get through.
Yeah.
95%
of the time is fatal.
That's I don't like to think about that kind of stuff. That's weird. Yeah. But good for him, man. That's
fatalities
amazing.
Are only good on Mortal Kombat.
Right.
Yes.
Which is a great game. All right, so
what about you, Jay?
I'm going to bend the rules a little bit here.
Okay.
Because I didn't see this on the internet, but I just saw it, and I think it's interesting. It's worth mentioning, and I'll probably write a blog about it because I think it's
cool.
Everybody's trying to figure out, and we already talked about it. What's Thomas going to do?
Yes.
What's he trying to do? What's going to happen with the draft? And I think now that he's been here for 5 years,
yes.
Is this a fifth draft, sixth draft?
We're entering the sixth season.
Sixth season.
Yeah. We're so lucky, by the way, that the whole regime came in at the same time.
Right, I know. It's kind of funny.
Anyway.
So everybody's trying to figure out what's he going to do. And I think that since he's been here for so long, you kind of look at some things and maybe start to draw some conclusions as to what he might do. And I was looking through, you know, the Falcons. We sent out our draft preview news release, which is chock full of information.
Yes, it is.
On the draft and great stuff. And shout out to Matt Haley and the Falcons PR crew for putting this together because it's fantastic. But I was reading through it yesterday. And one of the things that stuck out to me like crazy, and it might as well have an alarm and bells on it because it's just how much it stands out to me, is this particular stat. Okay, since 2008, 33 of the 38 players that the Falcons have selected on draft day were college seniors.
Okay.
33 of 38, okay? 17 of those players were either named or voted team captain by their coaches or peers.
Hmm.
All right? So if you want to know the type of player that Thomas and the scouting staff value, it's seniors and captains.
Yes.
Okay? And I'm going to look into – I haven't yet. I've looked into a couple. Tyler Eifert, senior.
Mm-hmm.
Desmond Trufant, senior. I'll look at – look into it a little further and see who the Falcons are projected to take by the mocks and how many of them line up with that particular stat, because I think that's certainly an interesting story. But, you really start to think about, okay, this is the type of player they want. If you're going to think of like a prototype player, I mean, you got to start out with looking at a senior, and is this guy a captain? Because it seems pretty likely that you're going to end up taking a chance on. And like, really, what chance are you taking? And here's some of the captains that seniors and captains that we're talking about that Thomas has drafted: Matt Ryan, Sam Baker, Thomas Dekou, Parade Jerry, William Moore, Garrett Reynolds, Sean Weatherspoon, Corey Peters, Mike Johnson, Kerry Meyer, Shan Schillinger, Akeem Dent, Cliff Matthews, Lamar Holmes. All seniors, all captains. Interesting.
What was that last name you said?
Lamar Holmes.
I like that.
Yeah.
Good for him.
So, you know, you're looking for leaders. You're looking for high-character guys, people who are okay with setting the example for their teammates. So as you really start to delve into who you think the Falcons are going to take, I'd say you start out with those two criteria.
I think so.
You find out who these guys are. And if they're not, I mean, I'm not saying you discount a guy because he's a junior, because he's not a, I mean, obviously, Thomas will take seniors that aren't captains, but you got to start out with that.
I think so. And
maybe that's the great equalizer that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
You're trying to find something that differentiates some of these guys who seem pretty even. Maybe that's the great equalizer.
And to play devil's advocate, on the opposite end, you know, that's the base. That's how they built the base of this current team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is there a point where maybe where they begin to move away from that a little bit and maybe draft a super talented junior in the first round, which certainly haven't done, but a junior or younger guy maybe that, you know, will benefit from all these other, you know, leadership guys, guys that establish leaders and establish leadership qualities. So, you know, once you excuse me, once you build a team like that, like you said, with all those team captains and seniors, you can start to maybe do some other things. So that's that's the other side of that. But it's a great place to start when you want to figure out what Thomas might be doing.
It's interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
It's very interesting.
Definitely.
All right, well, let's get on to our wrap-up here. And we're going to discuss three sure things that will happen in the 2013 NFL Draft.
Yeah, we don't make a lot of guarantees. But
we don't. But there are some things that we can pretty much guarantee that will happen.
Okay. What?
And so is it going to be three for each of us?
You're
three.
That's what I was thinking, yeah. Okay. And I think I just thought of another one based on what you were saying.
Oh, okay.
Based on team captains and seniors.
Yeah.
But I'll leave that to you. All right. I've thrown around stuff in my head all morning about this, but I'm going to go ahead and go for it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's going to be a trade.
Okay.
I think a tight end is selected.
Okay.
I'll even say this. I'm a sure thing. A tight end is selected. I love how we're making these sure things.
Yeah. Sure in our minds.
Yeah. A tight end will be selected in one of the first four rounds.
Okay.
And
I see how much thought you've put into this.
I think there's going to be a wide receiver taken somewhere.
Okay. I think
I think those are my sure things.
Okay.
So, Thomas, I hope you're listening. So, please.
He's listening so he can laugh at it.
Make me look smart. Please.
Yeah. No, he's not. He's going to be like, ha-ha, you don't know anything.
Yeah.
All right.
Despite me.
Yes. guarantees. All right. Things that are sure to happen.
With the Falcons selections.
There will be at least one player selected that we have never heard of. at least one player.
Yeah.
Which will cause a lot of scrambling on our end. And
yes.
Trying to figure out, okay, who's this guy? Has anybody heard of him before? No? Okay. So that's going to happen. Number two, the sheer volume of coffee that you and I are going to go through.
Oh, good Lord, yes.
Could fill an oil tanker. In the 3 days,
I believe that
Starbucks machine is going to get a workout.
We definitely
with
test
us.
Its limits already.
So that's my other guarantee.
Okay.
The last guarantee. It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough. I really think, I'm trying to figure, do I want to go funny?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Or do I want to actually make some kind of suggestion here that may.
I will say, I'm going to throw one more. Thomas Dimitroff will use the word swagger. Over the weekend, at least once in describing a player.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, I'm gonna say that the unexpected. There will be some kind of unexpected move, I think, in the first three rounds.
Okay.
And that's as far as I'm gonna go.
Okay.
Because I don't.
Fair enough.
I don't want to peg myself to, because I can say, oh, well, nobody expected us to take so-and-so.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think it's, listen, Thomas is a magician.
Yes, he is.
He's a magician, and as soon as you think you figured out what he's going to do, he's going to do something completely different.
He takes his cape and.
Right. Because you remember a couple of years ago, before it was the Julio draft. That's what I call it, is the Julio draft.
Okay.
We're like, oh, we're going to trade back. We got to trade back, right? We're going to trade back, get more picks. We had, what, six picks? I can't remember how many picks we had that year. Oh, we got to trade back. Well, what do we do? Oh, we trade up to six.
And we trade picks.
Last year we had like, who was our guy last year that you and I had? I'm trying to remember who we had pegged in the second round for us.
In the second round?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because we heard Peter Kahn's and we're like, huh?
Yeah.
What?
I don't even remember. Tight end, I'm sure. We had
probably a tight end. I can't remember.
Yeah,
there was somebody you and I were really high on.
Wow. Yeah. It's funny, though. It's like all these mock drafts. Once it happens, you just put it all behind you.
Yeah.
Whether you're right or wrong, all your expectations, all your guarantees.
Yeah. So I remember there was somebody last year that we were really big on, and I can't for the life of me. Oh, well. But I just think that it's like you said, kind of going hand in hand with there will be a trade. I don't know. Something tells me first three rounds could be something.
I can get down with that.
Just because it, you know, you've got a fearless GM. You really do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So who knows what he's going to do? Nobody knows. And maybe not even him at this point. But
we got some breaking news. It's not super breaking. So don't worry. But NFL is just, you know, as they're announcing, you know, the NFL Career Development Symposium is taking place at the Wharton School of Business up in Pennsylvania, University of Pennsylvania, Penn. Which we do know about, but both Thomas and Coach Smith will be, as well as Rich McKay, will be speakers.
Cool.
At this May 6th through 8th engagement. So
very cool.
Good for them, man. They get to do some cool things and enlighten some players that clearly want to be enlightened.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's cool.
Well, tweet us. I'm interested here. Tweet us your 2013 NFL draft guarantees.
Okay.
I want to hear what the fans have to say. What are your guarantees? And they can be, you know, having to do with the amount of coffee creamer that Daniel and I go through, or, you know, something that Thomas and his staff will do.
How many chips we will eat?
I don't eat chips.
Okay. I don't either, really. But
okay.
What do you snack on? I like to eat snack on peanuts.
Do you?
Yeah.
I'm into, like, protein bars.
How much trail mix will we
consume? Yeah, trail mix, yeah. Who knows? But, all right, tweet us your guarantees. Tweet us your thoughts on the tight end debate that we had earlier. And join us next week as we will have our final podcast before the draft and discuss all kinds of things that are draft-related and such. As maybe we'll have a better idea of what's happening. Who knows?
Yeah,
probably not.
But.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us on the FalconCast podcast. Remember to catch us every Wednesday here on AtlantaFalcons.com, and we will see you next week.